Hello and welcome to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, broadcasting this week from the Center for Honorary Degrees here at Car Talk Plaza. We've been awarded.
I have 98.6 honorary degrees. Do you know that?
Yes, I did know that. You know, we've been awarded DOCs by the University of California, San Diego Medical
School. You know what DOC stands for? Doctor of Cars.
Doctors.
Doctors of Cars.
Well, it really wasn't the school that gave it to us. It was about four renegade doctors who went into the storage closet and stole these parchments.
Yeah, they're going to get caught, aren't they?
I don't care. We're going to put them up in the office anyway. Isn't it great?
It is. I mean, it's wonderful that you can make something look so good.
Yes, authentic.
For a buck, you go out and buy...
Cheap frame, though. They cheaped out on the frames. They could have gone for a little better frame.
They did. Here it is, right here.
We'll reframe
them. The UCSD School of Medicine. Wow, the faculty and staff award hereby confer...
Janitorial staff.
Of the faculty and janitorial staff. Excellent. Yeah, okay.
Quite an
honor.
Do
we dare mention their names? I don't know.
I don't think they'd want their names mentioned. Not.
Well, let's mention them then.
Okay.
Bill Norcross, M.D. Michael Bowersox, M.D. Theodore Ganiatz, M.D. And Rebecca Donahue, non-M.D.
Wow. Well, they're going to be in trouble.
So you guys are out of work, and we have jobs for you here. Because our janitorial staff needs some help.
Indeed.
We could use a couple of ex-doctors.
How's your mail? Your mail bag?
I have I don't have a single piece of mail that is worthy of the high...
Not a stitch.
That meets the high standards that I have set for mail reading on this show.
Oh, don't let that stop. You read something crummy like you do every week.
I don't even have anything crummy. I have nothing, and I'm very upset about it.
Wow. You won't take that anymore, huh? Anyway, I guess we'll just...
We'll have to just take a call. Okay. I have no mail.
1-800-332...
I don't have a single piece of mail.
Will you shut up?
1-800... I don't even have a newspaper article to read.
332-9287. Hello, you're...
Not even a postcard.
Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Howdy.
Howdy.
This is Gary McMahon from just a little bit north of Fort Collins, Colorado.
Yeah.
And I'm a kind of a yodeling cowboy entertainer with a car problem.
Really? You're going to have to yodel for us. But well, that's beautiful.
Isn't that great?
Ranger Doug, eat your heart out.
That's right.
Isn't that good?
You must be a fan of Ranger Doug.
He's a good friend of mine.
Is he?
Yeah,
we actually do things together every once in a while.
Did you learn your yodeling from him, or was it the other way around?
It was the other way around, of course.
Ranger Doug, of course, is the lead singer and the idol of American youth.
Riders in the Sky.
Riders in the Sky.
Riders in the Sky.
Yeah,
They're a great bunch.
They are indeed.
They are.
Anyway, what's up, Gary?
Well, I'm kind of a bovine bon vivant myself. You know, I get out here on the road, and I bought this minivan to take me around, a 91 minivan on your advice.
91
no
what?
Kidding.
Oh, Chrysler.
Caravan?
Yeah, a Chrysler.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, one of those deals. And anyway, it's a great little car. I'm not knocking it very much, except in warm weather, it has a tendency, I think, to vapor lock. When the tank gets below half a tank, it'll start lurching and acting like it's out of gas, you know, and I've been able to overcome the problem by filling the gas tank up and keeping it full, but out here there's a long ways between gas stations, and sometimes I find myself lurching along for 50 or 60 miles. Now, I brought it into the dealer, and he said, "Well, Mr. McMahon, we just can't seem to find anything wrong with your car."
Hey, you must have the same dealer I have. Oh, maybe they go to school to learn that line.
They always say, "Well, we've put it on the computer and our mechanics can't find it."
We've done everything we can.
Yeah, first of all, whatever's wrong with it wouldn't be on the computer.
Right.
Unless they happen to have left the book on the computer, which explains what's wrong. But there may, in fact, be something wrong with the fuel pump.
Uh-huh.
And I would ask them as a goodwill gesture to replace the fuel pump.
Replace the fuel pump.
Yeah, the fuel pump is in the tank in this thing. And the reason it's in the tank is, in fact, to reduce the likelihood of vapor lock so that all the gas is under pressure, or at least as much of it as possible. In other words, if you had the fuel pump in the front, it would have to be sucking the gas from the tank, and for that reason would increase the likelihood of vapor lock happening, that is, before the pump. By putting the pump all the way back, you keep all the fuel under pressure from the pump to the injectors, and you diminish the chance of vapor lock, except you don't eliminate it 100%. But a weak pump could be the problem, or a misdesigned pump. They may have a bulletin on this thing. There may be some service bulletin that tells them to somehow replace the pump. I do remember putting a fuel pump in a minivan. It wasn't a 91, but it may have been a 90 recently, and it was different. It was not the same as the one we took out.
Oh, really?
Said to me that it had been redesigned. So what that always tells me is that the previous design was crummy, and that's why they improved it.
Well, I've had it in a couple of times, but not recently, since I discovered that I could drive it on the top half of the tank. I just said, to heck with it.
Yeah, but, go back and be a real pain in the butt.
And you have gone to the dealer, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right. I have yodeled in his ear.
Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe that's why he won't fix it.
That could be.
Well, Gary, I think you should go back and see if they've had, don't forget when you first went in, they may not have had the information, so they may have some updated information now that may help you.
Right.
So yodel your way back in.
Yeah, it's worth another trip.
All right, boys.
Nice talking to you.
Hey, yodel your way out of this.
All right.
Adios.
I love it.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Mary, I'm calling from Omaha, Nebraska.
Did you say Mary or Miriam?
Mary.
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 From Omaha.
Omaha.
Yeah.
What's on your mind?
Well, my brother told me to call you, but he's also the guy that referred me to these other mechanics, and that's why I end up calling you.
You were about to say these other ding-a-lings, I know, but you caught yourself just in time.
And as we know, you should always do what your brother says.
Okay, well, on his advice, I've called you guys.
Yeah.
I have an 88 Sentra Nissan.
Mm-hmm.
Nissan
mm-hmm.
Sentra. And when bought it a few years ago, used, I'm the second owner. And after a while, I don't know, sometime last year, the heat gauge stopped working, that goes from cold to hot.
Mm-hmm.
And I just ignored it.
So it reads cold all the time.
Exactly.
Okay.
Well, last December, I blew the head gasket.
Oh, what a shame.
So my brother told me a mechanic to take it to, and I took it to this mechanic, and he fixed it for $500.
That's about right. How many miles were on it at that time?
I guess around 80,000.
Okay, well, that's not so bad. Did he at the same time replace the timing belt?
No, he didn't.
Okay, maybe some late model Sentras don't have timing belts. They have chains.
Okay.
Yours may be one of those. In any event.
Anyway, so I got it back, and a week later, He fixed the gauges at that time.
Oh, good.
He fixed the gauges. And a week or 10 days later, it started running hot.
Mm-hmm.
So I took it back to the mechanic, and I said, well, it's running hot. And he said, oh, well. And he looked at it, and he said, you need a fan switch.
Okay, good. It was running hot when you were sitting in traffic.
Yeah.
But not on the highway.
Yes, initially
good.
That's true.
And
he put the fan switch in.
That all makes sense, because that was probably broken. And you didn't know about it. The gauge didn't work, and it overheated.
And that's
blew
why
the head gasket.
Wrecked the engine.
So this is all fitting together nicely. I like it so far.
Okay. So then it started running hot again about a week later. And I took it back to the mechanic.
Oh.
And he said, well, this time you have a hole in your radiator. So I spent $300 and got a new radiator.
Mm.
And I thought, now it's not going to overheat anymore. A week later, it's overheated.
And he said, this time...
And he said, well, this time...
You need a water pump.
Thermostat.
No. the thermostat's down the road.
Oh.
He said, there's a crack in this cover, and he tried fixing it with some epoxy, and he showed me the crack, and he showed me the epoxy.
What cover? What cover is this?
I think it was the cover to the head.
The valve cover?
Maybe, yeah.
No, that sounds bogus to me, but go ahead.
But anyway, and so he showed where he put some epoxy on it,
yeah.
And he said that should work. Well, a week or 10 days later,
bingo.
Got hot again.
Do you have like a standing appointment with this guy?
So, yeah.
I mean, do you re-up every time you go in and say, look, what's today, the 9th? Okay.
I'll be in on the 16th.
It's been 10 days.
Yeah.
And so then the next time I took it in, he said, well, maybe the radiator cap was too tight and there was too much pressure, so he lowered the pressure on the radiator cap.
Okay. It's clear that he's trying to just outlive you. If you die first, he wins.
He's gonna do it.
He is certainly trying to wear you down.
Yeah.
I mean, you are getting to the point where he's running out of ideas. I mean, he's got to be running out of
ideas.
When
he starts blaming the air freshener, then you're in trouble. I think I suspect at some point he's going to have to come to the harsh realization that he has botched the head gasket job. That if he just put a head gasket in, it's entirely possible that the head is cracked.
Mm.
Or that the gasket he put in isn't working correctly and it's leaking. You need to take it to someone else who can do the head gasket test. They can test for the presence of exhaust gases in the water jacket. Okay? In the cooling system.
Okay.
And if they find exhaust in the cooling system, you got to go back to this guy and ask him to take it apart. That's what you need to do. And don't give him any more room for excuses. Go back with the evidence.
Okay.
But you did spin an interesting yarn, Mary.
Wow. I mean, I thought the story would never end.
After my brother told me to go to this guy to begin with, and then when he said call you guys, I thought, I don't know if I should
Mary,
listen to
haven't you learned yet you should never listen to anything your brother says?
I never do.
I never do.
Well, see you, Mary.
Thanks a lot.
All right.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Say hi to your brother.
Hey, the Puzzler Answer and more calls are coming up right after this. This message comes from NPR sponsor Discover. Did you know you could reduce the number of unwanted calls and emails with online privacy protection, the latest innovation from Discover? Discover will help regularly remove your personal info, like your name and address, from 10 popular people search websites that could sell your data. And they'll do it for free. Activate in the Discover app. See terms and learn more at discover.com/online privacy protection.
Hey, you know what it's time for now?
It's Howdy Doody.
Yes, it is. It is indeed.
It's time for a call.
No, it's time
for the puzzler.
Answer to the puzzler.
Well, the answer.
I know you don't remember.
All right,
so
now the puzzler. Give me just give me 10
seconds.
No,
I don't even. I don't even want you to try because I know you're going to screw it.
Just give me 5 seconds. I don't have any idea.
Times. I knew that. It was a very hot day, and this fellow was driving his car on the highway.
I do remember that. It was a dark and stormy night.
No, it was a hot and steamy day.
Hot and steamy day.
And I think I mentioned there had been a thunderstorm.
Ah,
one of those kinds of days.
I remember the whole puzzler now, including the answer.
Thunderstorm, hot weather.
Yeah.
Hot. Real hot.
Real hot. And this guy, what's his name? Like, Fred. He's driving along the freeway.
His name wasn't Fred.
What was his name?
Ethel.
Ethel.
Anyway, it could have been one of several different cars. I think I said it was like an Acura Integra or a Pontiac. Those were a few that came to mind that this could have happened to. But there are other cars to which this could happen.
Right.
Anyway, he's driving.
The implication being it couldn't happen to all cars. Is that
it? Wouldn't happen to your 63 Dodge.
Certainly would.
Well, that's a big hint.
That is a big hint.
Okay, anyway, he's driving along and on this very hot day, long distance. So the car, of course, was what?
Hot.
Very hot. And I mentioned, did I mention there were thunderstorms?
It had been a lot of thunderstorming, and it was a cold and steamy day.
Right. And as you might expect, I didn't mention this in the statement of the original puzzle, but there were puddles around.
Uh-huh.
So he's driving on the highway, and he suddenly realizes that he's in urgent need of a haircut. So he exits the highway onto a secondary road, and moments later, he makes a turn into a shopping mall.
Isn't it interesting how the need for a haircut can just come upon you like that?
It can indeed. Even in the middle of the night, it happens.
It does. It's very, very strange.
Anyway, he pulls into the parking lot rather quickly because he's in urgent need of a haircut. And as he does, the engine stops, cuts right out, boom, bang, nothing. Dead.
Bada bing, bada bang.
He turns the key, and he hears practically nothing. All he can hear is a slight whoop.
I had to press you on that matter.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to give away too much, you know.
It was important.
And he thinks maybe the battery has died or become disconnected, so he checks by turning the headlights on, and they work, but he still can't get the engine to do anything. So finally the tow truck comes and tows his car away. He goes in for the haircut, right?
Yeah.
He calls a repair shop, and Krusty says, "Oh, have I got bad news for you, pal. You need a new engine."
Oof.
What? How could that be? How could that have happened? What did I do?
Are you quoting here now?
Yes, these are quotes.
Yeah. How could that be?
Yes.
What happened?
I have 3 quotes here.
Yeah.
One more and I'll have a whole gallon. And he says, it happened when you made that turn into the parking lot.
I remember that. That was the end of the puzzler.
And the question is, how did that happen?
And
why?
And what happened? What went on
Well,
here?
When he made that turn into the parking lot rather quickly.
This is going to be the answer now?
This part is the answer. Okay.
Yeah.
Should I have... So there have been a cessure?
Well, I mean, it would be nice to know when the question ends.
Oh, I thought...
Because the question was extraordinarily long. So people might not notice that you had ended the question and were beginning to give the answer. So you should let people know that this is now the answer.
It wasn't long enough. You had to make it even longer with that?
Yeah.
Should I recap? When he went through the puddle,
it was a dark and stormy night.
As he went through the puddle, and you probably noticed this phenomenon, as your tires hit the water, they will actually push water up in advance. That's why it's possible to go through a puddle and have water splash onto your windshield, because you will push water ahead of the car.
Surely.
Okay. My name is not Shirley, but that's all right. You'll push the water ahead of the car and up into the air.
Yeah.
And some of it will even get splashed on the windshield. And as luck would have it with this car, it got sucked into the air intake. That is the air that the engine breathes because of the low location of this, that is close to the ground. And there are some cars, because of they're making cars sleeker now with hood lines that are lower.
Sure.
And for obvious reasons, if the air cleaner is under there, there must be a place under there somewhere that's close to the ground where the air is taken in.
Mm-hmm.
And if water can get into that same area.
And if you've designed the car and crammed everything in and then said, oops, where are we going to put the air intake? You'll put it where it doesn't really belong.
Maybe where it doesn't really belong.
Yeah.
And he sucked in a few cylinders worth of water. And what happened is he hydro-locked the engine.
Which, by the way, doesn't take much, you know?
It doesn't take much, because when the pistons are all the way up, I mean, a few tablespoons of water might be enough to do it. There's such a small volume remaining when the piston is on the compression stroke. So the piston happily comes up on the compression stroke with water in the cylinder.
Right. Expecting to go up 3 inches, except when it gets to 2 inches, bingo.
Bingo.
Water.
And what happened? The piston got crushed, the connecting rod got bent, the cylinder head gasket blew, and hence a new engine.
Water can do that.
The water.
The power of water.
Yes, the universal solvent. Do we have a winner?
Yes, we have winners.
Aha.
Oh.
This took a collaborative effort.
Collaborative effort. Is it okay? They think they're going to get 2 t-shirts out of us? Ha, ha, ha.
No way.
Au contraire.
Oh, no. Pretty soon we'll be having football teams submit the answers.
The winners are Doug Bauer and Susan Beatty from Union Springs, New York. Let's hear it for Doug and Susan. And for having their answer chosen at random from among the thousands of correct answers that we received. Doug and Susan are going to share.
Mm.
Either an autographed copy of our book, and they can both read it. That's easy to share. Or they will share one of our brand new Car Talk baseball hats, and they can wear it, you know, they can alternate days.
Yeah, one size fits all. We have the real cheap ones that they have the adjustable thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have a new puzzle coming up in the second half of the show. I think an interesting...
Oh, going out on a limb here.
Far out. So keep your ear glued to the speaker.
Interesting puzzle coming up in the second half of the show.
So don't go for a salami sandwich just yet. In the meantime, we'll take a call. 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Oh, hi. My name's Jan from Montana.
Jan from Montana. From the entire state of Montana?
Yes.
All right, I'm going to issue a challenge to my brother. Give me...
the population of Montana.
No, no, no. Name for me
three cities in Montana.
Cities, towns.
Anything.
Rivers or mountain ranges.
All right, no problem. Des Moines, Cheyenne,
yeah.
Helena, and Pierre.
Good. I think Pierre lives in Helena.
Oh, right. But I'm from Missoula.
Missoula.
Oh, I knew that's
you know,
the only
river,
place I knew.
The river runs through it.
Yes.
What's the capital of Montana?
Helena.
Helena.
Oh, I can't.
Yeah,
I
you did
one,
by
man.
Accident.
Wow.
Well, what's up, Jan?
Okay. I have a 1985 Toyota Corolla.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
130,000 miles on it.
Wow, isn't that great?
It is. It's wonderful. And I drive back and forth. I have two places that I live, actually, in Seattle, Washington, and Missoula, Montana. So
Ooh.
I drive them back and forth, you know, a great deal. And as soon as I hit Spokane, if I'm going toward Seattle, my car begins to run very well. Now, this has been going on for like 2 or 3 years.
Oh.
And I've done everything to it that's possible. I mean, we've done the carburetor deal. We've done the timing chain. We've done the, what else? Did we do some clutch stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it just chugs. It just chugs and chugs when I'm in Missoula, but I drive at sea level in Seattle.
Okay, that's exactly my question. You have to educate us a little bit.
Yeah.
Topographical education.
First of all, give us some approximate distances. From Missoula to Spokane is how far?
488 miles.
And then from Spokane to Seattle?
Oh, no, okay, it's Spokane, that's exactly halfway, so it's 244.
Okay,
and then,
now I've got it, okay.
Right.
And the topography from between Missoula and Spokane is hilly.
it's hill, it's mountainous. You go through a couple mountain passes, but the elevation continues to be, you know, way above sea level. Like Missoula's 3,400 feet.
Okay,
right.
Above.
I'm putting this down on my plat.
And Seattle, we know, is sea level.
Exactly.
If it weren't sea level, there wouldn't be, what, a seaport.
A seaport.
It wouldn't be on the sea.
It'd be tough.
Right.
Unless they had
is that
elevators.
Where pungent sound is?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. You bought this car in Seattle.
Actually, in Illinois.
Okay.
Close enough.
You bought it at sea level.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, you bought it at sea level. I suspect the thing is not set for high-altitude operation. I mean, you're not... Missoula is certainly not very high altitude.
No.
But it's enough to make a difference.
Yeah, and because it's a carbureted car, you may have a problem with it, and they haven't been able to adjust it to run any better. So the entire time that you're in Montana, it runs lousy, not just on the trip.
No, just terrible.
All the time.
All the time.
And,
yeah.
And has your mechanic attempted to do anything to it?
Oh yeah, they rebuilt the carburetor. They did everything. And then what he did was, we took it back and said you didn't make it any better. And so he said, well, we'll just pull this PVC valve. And they pulled some wires off and said, well, this may help. And it didn't help.
You know,
at all.
We do this all the time too. We have realized over the years that most cars have too many parts for their own good.
That's a known fact.
Right.
Everyone knows.
It's like having an appendix. I mean, everyone has. You have your appendix removed.
Right.
Your
that's
tonsils
what happens.
Removed.
Evolution takes place, and cars just get more and more organs. One might say.
Yes.
Which aren't necessary.
Uh-huh. No.
Uh-huh.
Superfluous organs, we
right.
call them. So
right.
he had some unnecessary pieces, which he felt the need to remove, and he did that, and I think that's very laudable, except that he didn't solve the problem,
no.
Because I think what you perhaps need is to have different jets put in the carburetor.
Oh, okay.
The only problem being that when you get down to sea level, it's going to run lousy there.
Oh.
What you need is a fuel-injected car, because fuel-injected cars figure that out.
Okay.
They do.
Yeah,
fuel-injected
you're
cars
on the
have...
verge of getting a new car anyway.
Well, so I could, except it just seems like I love this car.
I'm not sure, but this car may have some built-in, or as part of the air intake system, may have some altitude compensating device on it that
uh-huh.
isn't working.
Okay.
I mean, those things have been around for, I don't happen to know if this particular one has one. It might not even be part of the carburetor, but have your mechanic look in the book,
okay.
if he has the book, and see if it has an altitude compensator.
Okay.
And if it does, it probably isn't working. That's what you need to get. And if it doesn't have one, you need to buy a fuel-injected car.
Okay.
Or move.
Okay.
Good luck, Jen.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, you're going to get some messages, then you're going to get the new puzzle, so hang around.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're here to attempt to answer your questions
about
cars,
you got it right.
Car repair, and the paranormal.
Paranormal phenomena.
Yes.
Did I mention, by the way, that I don't have any mail to read?
Yes.
However, I did want to discuss a TV show I saw recently, which explains the phenomena that take place in the Bermuda Triangle.
Pray, tell us more.
This guy, I don't know who this guy was. Actually, it was several people. I wasn't really paying attention until I realized what was going on. I think it was on the Learning Channel.
His name wasn't Hugo Hackenbush, was it?
Dr. Hackenbush? No, it's not Dr.
Okay.
Hackenbush.
Just checking. I wasn't sure.
Here's the theory, and this makes sense.
Go ahead. I'm ready.
Deep under the sea, in the vicinity of what we think of as the Bermuda Triangle.
The dark and stormy sea?
It was a dark and stormy night. Are deposits of methane gas.
You mean like sac du gas? I mean, they're bags of...
There's a huge deposit under them. Sac du gas.
Oh, you mean there are like crevasses in the ocean floor?
What do you call them? Reserves
yeah.
of methane gas.
Kind of coming up through the...
And every once in a while, they kind of erupt. And when they do, what do you have? You have gas flowing up through water, making bubbly water, just like bubbly in the bubbly water here.
Yeah, right here. Yeah.
And when you get bubbly water, happens to the water? It has a lower density.
I got it. So the ship's just...
Exactly. They're floating in what they think is 1.0 specific gravity water.
And all of a sudden, 0.6.
And all of a sudden, it's 0.6, 0.4. Who knows what it is? Down they go.
Never to return. Did they ever return?
No, they never... I like the theory.
With nary a warning. I mean, everything, you're sailing along.
Everything looks good. You might see some churning in the water. Blah, 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 blah.
Captain's on the poop deck. Everything's fine.
Doing what?
Captain's on the poop deck. I thought that was in the front of the boat.
Yeah, I mean, I thought this was the most interesting theory I have heard lately.
Yes.
I love theories.
And what about the planes in the air?
What happens to the gas? After it comes out of the water, it keeps going, right?
Right. Everyone knows that methane is lighter than air.
It is. Methane is lighter than air. And up it goes. And so here's a plane flying by.
Wait a minute. Isn't methane referred to as marsh gas?
I don't know. I think it is, actually.
Yeah, which means it stays in low-lying areas and doesn't, what?
Methane.
Rise.
CH4. It's got a 20 is the molecular weight. Sure.
Yeah.
And air is 21. It is. So it's light. It is lighter than air. Up it goes. And here comes a nice 747.
Sounds good, but
flying by, thinking it's flying through inert air. Instead, it's flying through It's flying through combustible methane.
And kaboom.
Kaboom.
With nary a warning.
And what does it crash into? This bubbly water, which has no specific gravity. Down it goes. Isn't that good? Not that it's good, but it's a good theory.
It's better than good.
It's better than good. I thought so myself.
I love it.
It rivals, I might say, the roof snow theory.
Where do we sign on?
Have we discussed the roof snow theory?
No, not
springtime. We don't want to discuss snow anymore. I'm sick of snow.
Talking about theories, it's time for the new puzzler.
The interesting new
puzzler.
Yeah, you said interesting.
I did, but I took that back. I said adequate new puzzler. Anyway, here it is. I was at the gas station one day with my young son.
You have a son?
Yes, I
do. No kidding.
I do.
I've never met him.
And I was putting gas, one of the do-it-yourself stations. I was putting gas in the tank, standing there, smoking a cigar like you're supposed to.
Like you're supposed to, engine running.
And he says to me, Daddy, how does the thing know when to shut off? You set the thing.
I know the answer to that.
You flip the little...
The guy behind the window. When you say 10 bucks, that's it.
No. This is, one of those where you didn't have to pay in advance.
Oh.
And we all know that when the tank gets filled up, all of a sudden, bang, the little handle flops down.
Yeah.
And the gasoline
shuts itself off.
On my car, usually when the tank is about half full, and I have to stand there and nurse it in for the last 5 or 6 gallons.
Yeah.
So I said, of course. I explained to him.
It's back pressure. Everybody
knows that. It detects the back pressure, and as you put gas in, the air comes out, and that's what shuts off the thing. And he said, wow, that's great, but he's only 10 years old. What did he know? He's a knucklehead, right? I knew I hadn't explained it. Why? Because I didn't understand it. That's why I couldn't explain it.
Yeah.
Because he didn't know.
Never stopped you before.
No, he didn't know that I didn't understand it. So we had to go into the archives.
Uh-huh.
I had to go into the archives and find a letter from Peter Hinkle, who asked the very same question.
And hopefully gave the answer?
And supplied the answer.
Whoa!
Of course it detects the back pressure, but since the air comes out of the tank at the same rate as the gas goes in, right? The rate the gas is going in is determined by where you set the handle, slow, medium, fast. So you put it on fast and the stuff goes in and the air comes out, okay?
Volumetrically the same.
Okay. Why should the back pressure change when the tank is almost full? It shouldn't.
We don't know the
should
answer
it?
To that.
No, I didn't know the answer. That's why I didn't explain it. So the question is...
How do it work?
How does it work? What happens? What takes place?
If you think
you know the answer, call my son. He's waiting. Send your answer to Puzzler Tower.
Yeah.
Car Talk Plaza. Yes. By the way, how did this rate? I hated to interrupt. I had to interrupt myself there. I wanted you to know that. I had to interrupt myself.
Well, I mean, I think that one's pretty good. I think that's pretty good. What's my rating scale?
1 to 5. 1 is hopeless and 5 is barely adequate.
It's a 3.
Okay, very good. That's what I was shooting for. If you think you know the answer or you'd like to participate in this inanity, write to us on the back of a $20 bill at Puzzler Tower.
It's not just an inanity. I mean, you could win a prize.
You could win a prize.
Certainly.
Thank you
Chances
for the interruption.
Chances are like a snowball and you know where. But
Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500. Harvard Square, and I know everyone knows how to spell it. I need
Certainly
to spell
they
it.
Do.
Cambridge.
Our Fair City.
Ma 022 1-800-332-9287. You ready for a call?
Yes. 1-800-332-9287. Notice how I use that double?
Yeah, yes, I like that.
Instead of 9-287. The Brits do that a lot.
Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Dick.
Hi, Dick. Where are you from?
Exton, Pennsylvania.
Where?
Exton, Pennsylvania.
Exton.
Yes, sir.
Okay. E-X-T-O-N?
E-X-T-O-N.
I don't know where that is.
It's not too far from Intercourse.
Ah, yes, I do know where that is. Yeah, so what's up?
I'm having a problem.
All right, we're ready, man.
My Ford automobile has been cited as a hazard to navigation.
What pray tell, is this Ford automobile?
It's a 84 LTD wagon.
Wow.
With a 302 engine.
Yeah.
With 109,000 miles on it.
Okay, why is it such a danger to the rest of us?
Well, I scare all the Amish men, their horses run across the field when I blow off large plumes of smoke.
Oh, you like got that problem.
Black, blue, or white?
Depends upon the time of day.
Yeah, white in the morning, blue in the afternoon.
Oh, that means it's going to be sunny tomorrow.
It'll be sunny tomorrow, that's right.
Yeah.
Now, I have a problem, but if I can gauge a red light, and I can put this thing down into a lower gear and come to a red light very cautiously, I don't have a problem. However, if I get caught at a red light,
yeah,
and I bring this thing to a halt, a little puff of smoke comes out like the papal window,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden a large plume envelops the whole car.
Like blue? Blue plume?
No, this is white.
White, eh?
White and stinky as thunder. And the state cops hand me little citations as a hazard to navigation.
Well, if you,
because when the light changes, I'm a quarter mile down the road.
And the clouds that's left behind.
And the people are still sitting there.
Gasping. Now, have you had anyone analyze this smoke to try to find out what it is? I mean, there aren't many places from which white smoke can come.
I've had 3 brain surgeons look at it.
Yeah, what'd they say?
I don't like their diagnosis.
Is one of them telling you you have a cracked cylinder header or a cracked block or something?
No.
No.
Are you losing any fluids? Or is your car losing any fluids?
When the cops arrive, I lose fluids, yes.
You have not been losing coolant?
No.
Are you losing brake fluid?
No.
Are you losing, what do they call that, automatic transmission fluid?
No.
Oil?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
I contend that the cloud has a blue tinge to it.
I contend the same thing.
You can't see.
It may look white to you, but it isn't.
Right, because you're probably old and blind like my brother.
But I can sympathize or at least empathize with you, Dick, because I used to drive a Heap that was just like this. And I had exactly the...
what do you mean, used to?
No, I don't have smoke coming out of my 63 Dodge Dartra.
No, oh no.
But out of my 50...
Freeloading with a Jaguar, I understand.
No, when I had my 56 Chevy, I had a few problems, mostly derived from the fact that it sat for many years without running, and it had broken rings, and it blew smoke like you wouldn't believe.
New meaning to the word jalopy.
I mean, I would stop at traffic lights, as I'm sure you know, and people would give you the dirtiest looks because you
and
personally...
hand gestures.
Unique. Extraordinarily unique. Even little old ladies came up with hand gestures that I didn't even know that
they
knew.
Oh, you couldn't even tell your mother about. Yeah, they were pretty innovative. I mean...
There's no solution to this, Dick. I mean,
all right, let's get to the real meat of the matter.
You need rings.
You need an engine rebuild.
Yeah, and this is about the number of miles that engine probably has in it.
Either that, or you're ready for another car. Let's get to the heart of the matter.
No, are you ready for a new car? Are you willing to invest $1,500 to $2,000 rebuilding?
I want to keep this car.
All right,
you do.
Then have the engine rebuilt. You need an engine rebuild.
Should it cost me $3,000?
No, it's going to cost you about $1,500.
Yeah.
Send the other $1,500 to us for the good advice.
Yeah, and send it on the back of a $20 bill.
Good luck, Dick.
Thanks very much.
All right.
Good Take luck. Care.
Bye-bye.
I remember
Bye-bye.
Those days. I mean, that smoke, you can't believe. What is the ratio, 80 moles of smoke to 1 ounce of,
yes,
of oil?
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, 80 to 1, I think. It's the same as it is
Incredible.
For water.
Incredible.
But it is amazing how little oil you have to burn.
You can burn a thimbleful of oil and have enough smoke to keep you completely disguised.
But you know what? In all those years that you drove that car, you were absolutely oblivious to the brain damage that ensued.
Huh?
Anyway, it's time to say goodbye.
Huh?
Another precious hour of your youth has been wasted listening to Car Talk. Our producer is Doug Pumpkin Lips Bourbon. Our associate producer and dean of the College of Auto Musicology is Ken Babyface Rogers. Our engineer and assistant producer is Jennifer Jiffy Loeb. Our technical advisor is the 40-year and one-week-old John Lawler. Our chief bottle... We're going to do this every week. Our chief bottle washer is Ken Hogan.
2 weeks, 40 years and 3 weeks.
Our public opinion polling is done by Paul Murky of Murky Research. Our automotive medical researcher is Dr. Denton Fender.
I'm 40 years and 750 years old.
Our communications director is George. Stay on top of this. Our secretary of pain relief is Les Aspirin. Our staff psychologist is Les Moody. Our director of long-range strategic planning is Kay Sarah, who's married to Frank Sarah, and now her driver's license is...
Kay Sarah.
Our staff geneticist is Dr. Gene Poole. Our transportation coordinator is Rick Shaw. Our director of gender relations is Androgynous. And last and probably least, our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Lewis Dewey, known around Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. Thanks for listening, and don't drive like my brother.
Whatever you do, don't drive like my brother.
See you next week. Bye-bye. Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And it may not sound like it right now, but this is NPR, National Public Radio.